Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 19th day of November.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets from Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Amy Sage of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. Visit us online at willag.org, willag.org. There you can purchase your ticket right now for the Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. That's coming up next Tuesday.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Elaine Cubb, let's start with you from Mastering the Grain Markets. You have a list of items we ought to discuss this week.
Yeah, I think that this is an appropriate time to sort of project towards the end of the year and wonder how the fund rebalancing at the end of the year might affect grain futures prices. And then my other topic, I'm going to kind of cheat here, and I really want to hear what Kurt and Amy have to say about the strong basis that my understanding, you know, is really coming from the eastern part of the Corn Belt, more so than us out west. So I really just want to hear their comments on that.
Excellent. Amy Sage of the Andersons.
Actually, that's one of the things I did want to talk about is just the strength and the basis and what we've seen from a fluctuation standpoint, particularly here out of central Illinois, where we're stuck between the western and the eastern markets. There is a vast difference between the two. And then getting plans in place for how we need to be taking advantage of any particular rallies that we might see coming in the winter and spring months and having execution plans in place from a future side too.
And Kurt Kimmel?
Well, I think they've got a pretty good list going there. I believe those are all good topics we need to probably focus on a little bit, but producer seems to be in a holding pattern here and need to probably visit some strategies they can look at going into 2016.
Let's do that. I think, Amy, we'll start with you on strong basis. Certainly that's been the case in the eastern Corn Belt. It fluctuates a little here in central Illinois, though I think on this Thursday, the 19th day of November, at 8 a.m. in Decatur, they're 25 over. And they're also 25 over in Hayes, Nebraska on this date, too. So interesting that the basis is really strong for corn in many parts of the Corn Belt. What have you been seeing and what do you talk about in your shop?
Absolutely. So that you mentioned that there, we're also seeing some 25 over the D's levels in Indiana as well. So there are strong markets all across the Midwest, but what we have seen really throughout harvest this year, we started with strong basis levels, regardless of the fact that there was a lot of corn getting put on the ground in our area. And most of that is coming from the fact that the farmer is not selling. So most of our accumulations that we saw during harvest were NDP or storage options. So that gives way for obviously people needing to get their needs met and basis values strengthening, especially since we are driven quite a bit from the eastern market and the eastern Corn Belt is where we were suffering a little bit more. So what we saw was really maintaining basis levels throughout harvest. And then at the tail end, once we got to about 75-80% done, here in Champaign, for example, we popped about 14 cents in 10 days and then continued to do so. What we've seen now is we've flattened out a little bit. What we're seeing is people are getting their needs met for November. And I guess at this point, I would expect that to continue. People get their needs met, and we kind of flatten out, and then we see a run-up again, and then things ease back a little bit. The only thing that we've talked about here that could throw a wrench into that is if at some point we do get a bounce where we do see some farmers selling, then that could push us lower. But at this point, it doesn't seem like that's going to be happening anytime soon in the cash market.
Just to explain the unique situation I think that the Andersons are in here in Illinois, your primary service areas for end users, I think, are in the southeast and a rail corridor, as opposed to much of the rest of the state of Illinois, which services whatever happens to be local, plus the Mississippi and Illinois River Basin. Is that right?
That is correct.
All right. So when you look out at other places across the state, are the basis levels as strong as they are for you? And is that because you're helping to service the southeastern livestock industry, which gets much of its grain and oil seed production, I believe, from the likes of Ohio and parts of Indiana?
That's a good point. We have been about as strong as anybody out there at this point in our area, and that's probably a lot to do with it. But really, levels across the board have remained firm, but we probably have a little bit of a leg up because of that market, that southeastern market there.
And then, Elaine, when you're hearing about this, how do you view from your perspective in the Western Corn Belt what's happening in the Eastern Corn Belt?
Yeah, I think that one working theory that we started out with a week or two ago was that it was because of the acreage losses and maybe this basis strength in the Eastern Corn Belt was a matter of supply. But because it is, but you mentioned Hayes, you know, Nebraska, and because it's widespread, and also because we're seeing strength like this in the futures spread itself, the east of the March is as tight as 6 cents, I think, today. You know, it tightened up quite a bit this week. So it seems like a region-wide scenario, and it just echoes what Amy was talking there about the farmers not wanting to be giving up the ownership. So I think this is not a matter of a shortage of supply by any means, just a matter of a shortage of physical ownership, perhaps.
It's an artificial shortage developed by farmers, right, who have closed the bin doors, who have, I suppose, built storage, closed the bin door. Can they win the battle, do you think, Elaine?
You know, I think they've won that. They could look at this as a really good opportunity and say, here, we've won the basis battle. We've got a very strong nationwide 20 under is the nationwide average for all the cash grain bidders. That's really unusual in November. You could look at this as a win and say, hey, I'm going to take this opportunity to sell the physical. And if I still want to participate in a after the first of the year rally, a spring rally, maybe I should be owning this by futures or options.
Does anybody else think that the price of corn is just too low, given the 1.7 billion bushel carryout? I got no takers.
I'm going to leave that for Kurt.
No takers on that one. The market's always right. I understand that part. But it seems that it may be. Well, I don't know what it seems. I shouldn't be an analyst. I should ask the questions.
I guess I would say I'm not advising sales at this point. I guess I do think that we're probably going to be stuck with the production numbers that we've got here, and I guess I'm not anticipating any type of reduction in January, given that we didn't see any in October and November, which I think a lot of us were expecting. But at this point, we're at the low end, and I think that it's probably going to take a little while because there's just nothing new and exciting at the moment. But at some point or another, I mean, we're going to really have to lock in corn acres for next year. And I think that could help us. You know, I think probably lowering our sights is more realistic, but I think that we're at the low end here and I'm not a seller here.
Well, so that brings me to a different discussion because Darrell Good wrote earlier this week in his weekly outlook and just took a quick little peek at next year and suggested that even at these levels that there may be more corn acres at these levels and there wouldn't have to be a battle in particular because farmers would be more willing to make, they thought they might make more money on the corn than they would be on the soybeans. I thought that was a unique perspective.
That is interesting to me, just based solely on conversations I'm having with farmers at this point. I guess even in central Illinois, we're having guys question whether or not they're really going to want to put more corn in the ground at these levels. Especially we're just working on tighter margins and it's more expensive to plant a corn crop. So to me, I think we need to bounce a little bit to secure those acres.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you. I've seen that from a lot of places, but that's certainly not the way Darrell has written it. And I don't know whether it's just the way he wrote it or whether I need to, and I'll follow up with him, though
sure.
he's not available this week to make sure we understand exactly what he's thinking.
I'll jump in here with just one little comment, and I don't have a lot of details about it, but as far as acreage goes, I know that I have heard anecdotally from a few people up in South Dakota, so this is a Western Corn Belt thing again, is that the CRP rates are now looking really attractive. In this price environment for corn, people are now looking really long and hard at CRP again.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Right. So the acreage thing, I think, is still sort of an open question, at least out in those, I don't want to call them fringe areas anymore, but that Western Corn Belt where something like that really can be compelling versus in Illinois.
All right. Well, let's come back to old crop. But I'll call old crop because we talked a little bit about 2016. But the current crop year, Kurt, what kinds of things should producers be considering now? Because this is the environment they're in. They've got really strong basis levels, really low prices. What do they do?
Well, it's kind of sit tight and hold. I think, you know, like was mentioned before, guys have committed to minimum storage and, you know, filled up the bins. It's kind of hard to get things new this time of year. And things, I think, putting a little fuel in the fire is these hot basis levels in spots. And the producer looks at, boy, my corn's worth quite a bit. I'm just going to sit tight and see what happens because if it's worth 30 over now, it's going to be worth a lot more over down the road. And so it's kind of a fulfilling prophecy here. And so I think we're in a situation where until we get a little closer to year end that guys may just sit tight here. And Bears might have Thanksgiving here, but the bulls should hopefully have Christmas. So as far as old crop goes, I think you just kind of sit tight here and ride the storm out because the end user still needs to get some more coverage on. So if you remember a year ago, we had one of the strongest rallies in history from harvest into year end. These guys, you know, chased the market, try to get some coverage on it. I think that's still fresh in their memory. I don't think we're going to, you know, see that type of move again, but we're in a holding pattern here. And if you can move at certain areas on good basis, you can, you know, replace it on paper at a discount where you sell the cash. And I think that's kind of a win situation if you want to hold on longer term.
So the seasonal pattern, in your opinion, should kick in sooner rather than later now?
Anytime.
That's You've been waiting on it.
Next year's election year, too. We got the election. I'm sure Donald's going to get him stirred up about pro-ag. So, you know.
Did you all hold your hand up on that anytime? Bring the seasonal pattern on. Is that right? Okay, Elaine, how about you? Strategies that producers can use?
Well, you know, I think I talked a little bit about the opportunity to re-own this on paper. And I'm not necessarily suggesting that outright. Like Kurt said, people probably have individual storage situations that they have to consider. But to Kurt's point about the seasonality, and this goes back to you when we started our first list about, you know, what are we going to talk about today? Going into December, you have to kind of wonder what the speculative money might do, what the outside markets might do. And about the only thing that I can imagine, and I don't think this is likely, but it would be a surprise to the market if the Fed does not raise interest rates in December. And it would be the kind of surprise that would drop the U.S. dollar, and that would be an opportunity for grains to raise. You know, and it would have to be a surprise. Otherwise, I think this is just status quo. We just kind of keep on in these doldrums all through the end of the year. But that's the one little surprise that could happen, and it would be a bullish surprise.
Wait, I thought if the Fed raised the interest rate, the dollar would go down, not the other way around.
Oh, I disagree, right? I mean, why would it go down?
I don't know. don't ask me. I only hear it from other people.
I think the thinking is the Fed raising the interest rate expresses some confidence in the economy. It increases the foreign investors' ability to raise or to continue to get income from their dollar investments. So raising the interest rate, I don't think will suddenly spike the dollar any more than it already has, because that's a very broad expectation for December. If they don't raise the interest rate, that we have a surprise, and I don't think that's going to happen. It would certainly be a surprise to me.
All right. Interest rates. The other thing that might be interesting to watch is this weekend. And Elaine, I don't know whether you and or Kurt have been, or maybe Amy, have been watching this very much. But the election is this weekend in Argentina, and it appears that soybeans will be moving into the marketplace. And I think it's just a matter of which person wins as to how wide this spigot gets opened up. I suppose at this point the question really is, has the market actually built some of this into the price of soybeans since the first election took place, and they're headed into this runoff election in the weekend? What do you think, Elaine?
Well, you know, I wonder if perhaps this week's soybean export number, the sales number, was a little bit disappointing, and it felt like a short-term pattern. This is not the pattern that we've seen longer term for a period of weeks, but that's certainly one explanation for why we're seeing that now, yeah.
And Kurt?
Well, I think it's being built in now, I think, more out into the future, because before we know it, we're going to start seeing the world buyer shift to the southern hemisphere. And not only will they be moving the old crop that they've been storing for 3 or 4 or 5 years, there's going to be some new crop on the market. So that's going to be the concern. And that's why we're seeing some analysts, you know, projecting that once we turn the calendar 2016, these beans could drift lower.
I liked your thought earlier when I asked you the question, Elaine, about some of the things that we might want to consider. And this one I had forgotten about, but we talked about it a whole lot in recent past. It was the fund rebalancing that happens at the end of the year. And I think when we were talking about this, it had a lot to do with a German fund more than anything else. But that rebalancing should happen at some point. And do you think they'll shift things around enough that the commodities will see some kind of movement from it?
The commodities, yes. If you're going to open it up to all commodities, yes. I'm going to say yes. But my understanding is
how about corn and soybeans and wheat?
those specifically? Oh. Yeah. Because, no, the ones that would be really interesting here are the livestock markets, because they've seen a major year-over-year price change. We're a lot cheaper than we were a year ago for cattle and hogs. So that means to make everything back to even or back to the percentages that they want it to be, there could be some really serious futures buying of cattle and hogs in the next 5-6 weeks. But corn, soybeans, wheat, you know, year over year, we've been fairly flat. So to some extent, I am expecting to see some, the balance of the rebalancing should be a net bullish effect, but I don't think it's going to be a major one, unfortunately.
Are there things that livestock producers should do now to prepare themselves for what this rebalancing might do to their prices?
Oh, not necessarily. I think that
just owning the commodity is good enough.
Really jittery futures markets. If you want to be making that gamble, you know, that was my opinion about it. There you go. But I don't think as a hedging tool right now, trying to gamble on a fund-induced buying spree is a great strategy now.
Anything on the livestock from you, Kurt, today?
Well, cattle continue to trade like the old pork bellies, you know, all bullish or all bearish, just extreme volatility. Pork-wise, you know, if we can go ahead and just trend a little higher here going into the close Friday here, seems like we ought to have some seasonalities and seeing the hogs gain on cattle here as we move in December, and the main fundamental spin will be, you know, Christmas ham demand. You know, even though we're still killing over 8% more hogs than a year ago, the market's been beat up fairly bad here since the middle of October, and we feel there's a positive play in the hog market here for the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Amy, I'll come back to you for the grains and the oil seeds. I've got a couple of questions in mind. I know, and I don't know whether you track this, but I'm sure you do, from month to month, how far behind are producers on marketing compared to where they normally would be. And we've talked a lot about them holding crop, both, I think, in the elevator and in their bin site. So where do they stand today for both corn and soybeans?
Yeah, we actually just took a look at that, and we think our producers here are about 30% sold in the 2015 crop. That typically, I guess, historically would be a little light, closer to 40-45, although the past several years really has been similar to this one where we haven't had a lot sold going into the first of the year. But at this point, 30%, probably 10 to 15 behind a normal pace over the course of the past 5 to 10 years. And at this point, I think we'll probably remain there, and we'll see that for the next several months. The only caveat is that we might see some selling based on cash flow needs, which typically is not encouraged by anybody as a market advisor. However, sometimes you got to do what needs to be done. And I think that will actually come more so in the bean market. Obviously, guys could get heavier sold in beans and generate more cash flow quicker than what they can selling corn. But at this point, I think we'll probably stay in that 30 to 33% range.
And that's good for both corn and soybeans? And is that,
yes, actually.
And is there much of a difference between what is normally sold for corn and soybeans at this time of year?
Not really, actually. Most of the time, it evens itself out pretty much. Beans are typically an afterthought in this area compared to corn, but since there's less to market, it usually ends up being pretty neck and neck.
Interesting. And then I want to take you back to the southeast, to the rail corridor, because we've heard over the last several weeks that it might be cheaper to bring soybeans or bean meal and or corn into some of those places. Are you finding that it's harder to market into those areas, or are you competitive enough to continue to keep the trains running?
We actually have been able to keep trains running that direction. So at this point, we haven't seen a struggle. Freight-wise, you're exactly right. It has been pretty competitive out there. But really, in the grand scheme of things, it takes a lot of pre-work to be able to get that done. So there's, you know, big players that can make that happen. the smaller companies in this area, it would take a lot to do that. So
essentially what you're telling me is that it's possible, but they haven't done the work to do it yet.
Right. Some have, and the bigger players obviously are more equipped to do so, but it takes a little more effort than what you might think.
All right. What else have you been thinking about, Elaine Cubb, at this point as it relates to the marketplace? Anything I haven't asked you yet?
Well, no, I mean, it's been so quiet.
I know.
It has been, but, I usually look at all these outside things, and the dollar has not been quiet. The dollar has continued on this rally. It's up to that 1.00 level, which, you know, doesn't really have any units, but it's an interesting level to think about. And the grains have been fairly resilient. If anything, I would comment that it is a good sign of strength that the corn and soybean prices haven't fallen apart any more than they have, given the strength of that dollar.
Well, I was thinking this week, and maybe each of you can take this up, have we gotten as bearish as we can get at this point? Mm-hmm. Because it almost seems that way, too.
Yeah, and given the timing of harvest being over, I'll let somebody else comment on that, but I can see where that might be the case.
Amy?
That's what we've talked about here, is that as much bearish information as we could possibly get, it seems like, has been factored in at this point. So as much as it's going to take something more exciting and unexpected to get us a rally here at this point, I guess I think it's going to be pretty tough to drive us too much lower than here. I don't know how many more negative factors we can put into this thing at this point.
Well, let me ask you this in a different way, so I'll pull you. Are you still bearish the price of corn? Because if you're all still bearish the price of corn, then maybe we're there. Kurt?
I'm not particularly real bearish. I mean,
that's all I need. Not particularly real bearish. Okay, that's one. Amy Sage?
I'm not bearish from here. I think we're close to the bottom here, and ultimately.
All right. I'm not bearish here, but I think we're close to the bottom here. That tells me another one. That's two.
Sure.
Elaine, you get to choose your words well this time around, don't you?
Okay.
I'm going to say I'm neutral through the end of the year with, 20 or 30 cents of play to the downside, possibly. But I'm neutral to the end of the year, but, ask me again after the first of the year when you would seasonally start to see around.
I got my answer. Okay, I got my answer out of you all. Well, thank you all so much. Let's wrap up with any final thoughts you have at this point. Kurt, I'm looking forward to having you up at the Farm Assets Conference. Actually, Pete Manhart up at the Farm Assets Conference. He doesn't have to travel very far next week.
I hope he gets there.
Well, he will. It's not very far away. that'll be an easy trick. And before I get your final word, let me remind folks, if they want to come to the Farm Assets Conference, you can buy your tickets during the day Monday, 800-898-1065. But because you're probably listening to this online, it's easier just to go online to farmassetsconference.com or willag.org. You can pick up a ticket. It's just $30. It should be a really great day there in Normal, Illinois at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. If you've already got your ticket, doors open for us at 9:30. The Corn Growers Annual Conference starts at 8 a.m., and we start immediately after that. So they finish up at 10, and we start at 10:30. So if you haven't ever been up to the Corn Growers Annual Meeting, you might want to go to that as well. And it's in the same facility, so all you have to do is go there, and then you come out, go to a different room, and you're at the Farm Assets Conference. And they're going to check you in, I think, as well at the Corn Growers event. So I don't even think you'll have to check into our event. This is just a $30 bill. We'll talk about big data and with the vice president at Climate Corp, who works for Monsanto, of course, because that who owns Climate Corp. John Jansen will be there, kind of go through big data and the way I think really, and I talked to him today about this, it's going to change the world that farmers live in, because the data has already been being collected. It's been collected for a long time. Now it's going to be used, and it's going to be used by farmers. It's going to be used by third parties. And you'll need to understand how this works. So big data kicks off our event. Of course, we'll have a corn panel. We'll have a soybean panel. Pete Manhart will be there. Jerry Golke's coming in. Sue Martin is coming in. Mike Zuzulo will be in. A whole bunch of our analysts, eight of them, will be there. And we'll take up the price of farmland with Bruce Sherrick from here on campus. Gary Schnicki will be there, too. And we'll do one other item, which is the nutrient loss management strategy for the state of Illinois. There's a big push across the whole of the United States to make sure that nutrients don't make their way into the river systems. And that's going to be more important than ever along the Illinois, Mississippi, Ohio, Missouri rivers. And we're going to take that up in the form of a couple of things. What the problem is, we'll do that in 10 minutes, which is really fast for it. We'll talk about what one of the solutions might be, the easy buttons that farmers can manage. And I can tell you one of them is not to put anhydrous ammonia on prior to November 1st anywhere. And then we'll take up the implications if you fail to do it. And those are policy implications that are taking place in Massachusetts, already have, and are taking place in Iowa, and they're under lawsuits there. So those are all the things that will be happening at the Farm Assets Conference. Thanks for letting me take some time to convince you that if nothing else, you should get a ticket, 800-898-1065, on Monday during regular business hours. Right now, online, farmassetsconference.com, willag.org, or just show up at 9:30 in the morning at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. That's there on the Illinois State University campus or right next to it. In Normal, Illinois. But if you do that, bring cash. We won't have a credit card reader, so cash or check, one of the two, and bring $30. I doubt that they'll have a lot of change. You might have to come back and forth for that one. And we look forward to having you there. Okay, so I probably left plenty of time there for you all to think of a final word. We'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Yeah, there's going to be, a lot of headline news, the strength, the weakness of the dollar, Fed raise or not raise rates, commodity fund rebalancing. But at the end of the day, I think from a farmer's point of view, I think South American weather and spring weather here in the U.S. trumps all that. And probably what's more of a observation that needs to be, you know, kept in back of the mind is Baltic Dry Index is historically low, and what that index tracks is world shipping values. So as far as foreign buyers go, they've got a fairly good thing going here at getting product shipped across the big water here.
Amy Sage of the Andersons.
Yeah, I would just say going into this next month and into the end of the year here, even if holding is the right thing to do at this point in time, which I think most people are planning to do, make sure to get your action plans in place and be looking at different ways to take advantage of programs and things for the 2016-2017 crop, and make sure a plan of action is together and be ready to execute later in the year when we have opportunities to do so.
And Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets.
I want to build on what Kurt said. You know, he mentioned the weather, and I think if you're looking towards the springtime or the action plans that you're going to make for marketing this crop and the next crop, it's really going to depend on, you know, we've had a dry fall here. If it stays a dry pattern or you get a La Nina sort of thing going on, that or South America, that's really going to define how the spring plays out. So certainly keep your eye on that weather stuff.
Elaine Cubb is with Mastering the Grain Market. She's out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. Kurt Kimmel is from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And Amy Sage is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. That wraps up this 19th day of November edition of Commodity Week.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.